when we are experiencing something directly and we are actively trying to make it something else or tell ourselves it's something else, all we're doing is actually pointing out the massive disparity between those two. And in that disparity, like, we don't function better. We typically feel worse.
Welcome to the Mental Training Lab. I'm Pete Kadushin, your host, and my job is to have fun conversations that leave you with actionable tools, little experiments that will help you improve your mindset and mental skills so that you can do the things you love at a higher level. Today's episode with Dr. Raymond Pryor was so packed that I needed to split it into multiple episodes, so here goes round one. Raymond has a PhD in sport and exercise psychology and is a performance consultant who has worked with a wild range of performers, including pro, college, and Olympic athletes, pop stars, actors, and high performers in the financial space. Now, in this first edition, Raymond illuminates why thinking our way out of unpleasant experiences actually works against our biology and our evolution. And then we also take a look at why getting your psychology in order, investing in mental training, is your highest point of leverage as a performer. What's going to become really clear as you listen is Raymond's commitment to being up to date and deeply knowledgeable about the research, and his passion about helping clients get beneath the surface instead of stuck with traditional pop psych techniques. All right, enough from me. It's time to get in the show. Raymond, thank you so much for joining me for the first ever recording in person on the Mental Training Lab.
Thank you for having me on your voyage, your initial voyage to live podcasting.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I started this when we were still in pretty much lockdown, and so everything was done digitally. And so it's nice to be able to look you in the eyeballs while we do this in person.
It is. Everybody had their COVID project, and this was yours. The lab was born out of necessity.
That's right. And so I guess we're just going to jump right in because we're probably going to end up talking for a long time anyway. And so there's no reason to beat around the bush. So the first question is, you know, I'm curious what you find compelling about performance psychology and, you know, how has that changed over time as well?
Changed over time for me, or how has performance psychology changed over time?
No, I'm curious for you, how has that evolved?
What I find compelling about performance psychology is, I think, stemming at least from our understanding that everything we do is filtered through our psychology, or if we're being really specific, our psychology and our neurology first. You know, our psychology and our nervous system are one in the same in many ways. It'd be a very overlapping Venn diagram if they were connected to each other, which they are. Anything we do physically, emotionally, cognitively, all runs through our psychology. And so if you're not understanding it, learning about it, even I would dare say prioritizing it in your life, you're probably not performing at as high a level as you could physically, strategically, or just learning as effectively as you could. So what I find compelling is that if we want to improve any area of our lives, including our performance, starting with our psychology, you're starting at the hub of the wheel, and then you can really identify where to get better. And you can improve your performance most directly by addressing your psychology first, because it's either going to lead to the improvement itself, or it's going to reveal more objectively and more accurately where you can go get better.
So the first thing I hear is that there isn't, for you at least, a huge distinction between mind and brain, or maybe mind, brain, and body, that it all kind of starts and ends in the same place?
We could say that they're different. I think if you're talking brain or mind, you know, your brain is an organ like every other organ in your body that is designed to keep you alive. It has physical anatomical structures that influence or control certain functions in our body. Our mind, we might think of more as our consciousness, more as our perceptions to things, creativity and imagination. You can think of them separately, but like there's so much overlap between them that sometimes I think it's actually more effective for us to see them in the same. And then of course our brain is just the central hub for our nervous system, and our nervous system is just this intricate 80 billion neuron network running on electricity through our body that is controlling literally everything in it. So sometimes it's, I think it's easier for us to see it all as one system and one map. Other times it might be more helpful to kind of specify certain areas. But if we train our mind, that's kind of our top-down processing, we might think, then our bottom-up processing becomes more reflexive in ways that are more functional for us, and that is going to impact our entire nervous system. And if you address the area of our nervous system with your psychology, then your neurology will change, and then your nervous system is going to learn to adapt. Like, that's how our brain and body learns. So they are separate in some ways, but very, very interconnected.
Well, and the thing that you just pointed to is that the feedback loops are also really interconnected. Yeah. I want to go back to something you just said. So you mentioned the top-down processing, right? So we change our mind, we can change everything mm-hmm. underneath that.
Yeah.
But then you pointed to bottom-up and talked about reflexive experience or habitual. And so can you put that in terms that someone who isn't swimming in the literature could understand?
Sure. It might be... I think what is really important, you don't need a deep neuroscience understanding of your brain to get the most out of it, but some basics are really important. If you were going to make a fist with one hand, that would represent, and this is signifying your brain, so we're kind of imagining you making a fist and kind of holding it in front of your face. That would signify what we call our old brain. Our old brain are the deepest and most survival functions for our brain. They're the stuff that runs on automatic, so we can think of them as our reflexes. What's really important to understand about this part of our brain is that it is way stronger and way faster than the rest of parts of our brain. So when I say bottom up, I'm talking it's automatic, and the bottom is stronger than the top. The other important portions about understanding about this brain is that it doesn't understand the difference between what's real and what's not. It only understands what the direct experience we have with it. So it cannot decipher between perceived danger and real danger. Mm-hmm. It only knows what it feels and what we are telling it. And then what else is important about it in terms of that is that its main function and technically only function is to keep us alive. So if it involves us, if there's some type of feedback from us that we are experiencing that is telling that portion of our brain, you're in danger, it is going to respond, and it is strong enough and fast enough that it will shut down or turn down the other parts of our brain, which would be the top-down functioning. Top-down functioning is if you were to take your fist that is representing your old brain, if you were to cover it with your other hand, that would represent the kind of prefrontal cortex, the larger frontal lobes in our brain, which are imaginative, conscious thinking, rational thinking, can understand the difference between what's real and what's only imagined. However, they are far slower and far weaker than the survival portions of our brain. Where this comes into our nervous system and even just mental training or psychological training is that the friction between these two, so essentially how the broad framework for training your psychology is to trigger your old brain into reflexive responses, feedback loops that you're talking about in your nervous system that are avoidance and survival based. So essentially triggering it to do what it does, and then using that and applying awareness to it. That's where our mind comes in, to make a conscious decision to act in a way that is actually more productive for us. And it is in that friction, when you repeat that process again and again, that your top-down functioning ultimately becomes your bottom-up functioning. So essentially you're taking a conscious and intentional action, using the friction between that and your reflexes and training your top-down functioning to then be a bottom-up reflex. What this might look like tangibly is, let's say, for example, I'm a golfer and I'm on the first tee and my reflexive reaction is anxiety. I'm worried about where this first tee shot is going. I'm worried about how the round is going. So anxiety, by definition, is worry about the future. You're not going to turn off anxiety. Your old brain is way too strong and way too powerful to just turn it off. Go ahead.
Well, and I think one of the things that I run into with some athletes is that they imagine a world where they could turn off anxiety. Yeah. Right? But if you care about the outcome and the outcome's uncertain, then there's going to be some worry about that outcome. And so go ahead.
And speaking of feedback loops, your brain knows when score counts. You cannot fool it. And if you can, you can't do it for very long.
So then you run into the one of the cliches. You will just play like it's a practice round.
Yeah, just like, treat every shot like it's exactly the same. Or, you know, like you said, like treat it like it's practice. Like your brain knows it's practice. And it knows when its score counts and it knows the difference between the two. So in this situation, what we do is we want to pay attention to that bottom-up reflex, which is worry about it. Also pay attention to what we're actually getting from that in a way that shows our brain, hey, that thing you think you're getting, which is more certainty, more safety, more security, seeking comfort and certainty where there is none, not working for you. And then being able to train ourselves to respond differently. So actively and consciously shifting focus. It might be shifting awareness to a different place. It might be trying to bring in a different sensory experience that can tell our mind and then therefore our brain, actually, you're free to execute as intended. And if we do this enough, that actually changes the direct experience with it. One of the things that's kind of really important, particularly as we're talking about modern performance psychology, is we're starting to really understand that we don't really control our mind with our mind. We control our mind with our direct experience, because we're not going to rationally use the weaker and slower portions of our rational thinking brain to overpower the parts of our brain, which is the survival portion of our brain that only responds to our direct experience.
Yeah. And so, and you know, anybody has had this experience where they start to get nervous or they start to get anxious, and it could be first tee jitters. It could be before a big championship. Could be getting ready to go on a first date, right? But you go, okay, well, I just don't want to be nervous. Like, don't be nervous. Don't. You're not going to think your way out of that because there's still perceived threat. And, you know, I've heard a number of times, it's easier to act your way into a new way of thinking than to think your way into a new way of acting. And so that sense of direct experience,
yeah,
and that you can not get rid of anxiety, but you can harness the energy that's associated with it and aim it in a productive direction, as opposed to engage in a fantasy, which is at some point during an important tournament, when I get on the first tee, right, and I might be leading the tournament, I'm just not going to be nervous, because there's going to be nerves.
There are going to be nerves. There might even be anxiety. And what you're talking about, Pete, is so if we're really talking about, again, the broad framework of psychological training, it's, can I recognize my unproductive reflexive responses and interact with them in a way that changes my direct experience with them directly, then it changes my direct experience with the thing that I'm doing, your performance. So like you're saying, instead of me trying to turn off anxiety, if I interact with anxiety differently, my direct experience with anxiety changes, and then my mind changes about anxiety. And if my mind changes about the anxiety through my direct experience with being on the first tee in a tournament with score counts or in contention or before a championship competition, et cetera, that changes. But trying to turn off our thoughts, trying to talk our way through things that are not credible to us, like essentially trying to change our direct experience by convincing ourselves is it isn't what it is highly ineffective.
Well, because as you pointed out, the old brain only operates with what's in front of it.
That's right.
Whether it's real or it's not. And so telling it that that's the, what it's perceiving isn't there is not particularly credible. And I want to come back to this credible inner dialogue.
We'll come back to that. But I do want to note the thing that you're pointing out. So for the listeners who are thinking like, hey, well, what can I take from this portion of our conversation? When we are experiencing something directly and we are actively trying to make it something else or tell ourselves it's something else, all we're doing is actually pointing out the massive disparity between those two. And in that disparity, like we don't function better. We typically feel worse.
Well,
you know, yeah, go ahead.
Well, and so like we can use the concrete example, right? So I'm getting ready to head to the first tee and I'm having both the physiological and psychological experience of anxiety.
Yeah.
Right. So there are thoughts running through my head. Don't yank it out of bounds. Mm-hmm. What is it going to mean when I yank it out of bounds?
That's right.
What's going to happen the rest of the round? But then I'm also having the physiological experience of increased heart rate, increased muscle tension. I'm probably having a narrowing of my focus. And so it's harder for me to not pay attention to the thoughts that are zipping through my
mind.
That's
right.
And so in that moment, what you're saying is, if I try and tell myself to be calm, just I'm calm, it's not a big deal, it's just another swing, I've done this 1,000 times, which is advice that a lot of coaches
very well-intentioned advice. Super unhelpful.
Because what you're saying is, this just points out the gap of, here's what I would like to feel like, and here's what my body is currently experiencing. And then my old brain is telling me, yeah, here's what your body's currently experiencing. And then you just see the gap, this chasm between what I want and what I'm actually having.
That's right. Which, the worst advice you can give somebody who is in a heightened state of arousal, such as anxiety, which is a fear-based arousal, is to tell them to relax. Because the opposite of anxiety is not relaxed, first of all. And the second thing is, you're just pointing out, here's what you really wish you were feeling and you are not. In which case, then we often tend to feel anxiety about the fact that we're feeling anxious. And now we have this snowballing effect, and we call this like a layering of emotions. All because, not because the first layer was that bad, but because we have added layers by trying to step out of it.
Well, and there's the Buddhist adage of being able to catch the second arrow.
Yeah.
Right. So the first arrow being sort of the inevitable physiological activation that comes with a big moment and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the second one is trying to fight in that friction between, here's what is and here's what I wish it was, or here's where I think I would perform my best. And if only I was calm or confident or everything felt certain, if I knew I was going to win the tournament standing on the first tee on Sunday, man, just wouldn't things be easier? And that's the second arrow.
Totally. And what a wonderful analogy for what it means to have friction between your old brain and your young brain. The initial friction is going to happen. Our response to that friction is obviously a self-induced arrow most of the time, if we're not aware of what's going on and also not being really intentional with how we respond. And then, of course, training that away from competition certainly makes it more likely for us to be able to do so when things count for us.
So that was the first question, and we're already almost at 20 minutes, and so we're doing great.
Killing it.
And I have many more questions in front of me.
Yeah.
I do want to go back to something you pointed out right at the beginning, though, because I think it's worth emphasizing. You said that psychology is the first entry point, and for a number of reasons, but really, if we sum it up, it's just the biggest lever. And what you pointed to was that either I'm impacting my thought process and everything cascades down from there, but when it's time to then go train the technical, if it's time to go train the tactical, having gotten my house in order above my neck is going to positively impact those as well. Does that sound like a decent reflection of what you're saying?
It just makes it more accurate, objective, and efficient. I'll give you an example. Client I was working with last week, playing in the PGA Tour Championship Series. First round, not great in terms of putting. Like, he missed a couple of shorties. And he called me after his first round, and he's like, Raymond, I don't have time to talk today because I got to go practice, you know, 3-footers. And I was like, time out for a second. Before you go do that, how many of the 4-footers you had throughout your round, which let's say it's 10 or 12, how many of them did you take? The phrase I use with my clients is in alignment. Alignment means that my visual focus, my attentional focus, and my temporal focus, temporal is time frame, past, present, or future, were in the same place without competing tasks. So essentially, how many putts were you putting just to putt it and see what happens? And how many of them were you putting it to not miss another putt, to make sure you make up for a bogey? Essentially, these competing tasks that divide our focus and take us out of the present and also take us out of our skill execution focus. And he was like, oh, let me think through. Da, da, da. He's like, probably 10 of the 12. I was like, look, man, you can go putt for 3 hours. You're going to make everything inside of 3 feet. That's not the source. The source is you weren't really where you were when you were there. So his feedback loop over those putts was telling him, you better not miss another putt. And he was getting anxious over them, because if you're in the Tour Championship, there's only 30 dudes in the field. If you're not making 4-footers, you're falling back. Mm-hmm. And his reflexive response to it, at least in that situation, was the source of what was interfering with his ability to execute his skills as intended, not his stroke, not his reading greens, not his reading speed. So when we are paying attention to our psychology and being honest about it and understand it enough with terminology that gives us ways to assess how well we actually executed our mental performance, so to speak, that gives us much more accurate feedback about where to go practice. Now, if he had told me, Raymond, 12 out of 12 putts, I was in total alignment, then I'd be like, no, I'll see you in a couple hours. You better go practice your putting stroke because you're jerking them left or you're doing what you're leaving the face open, whatever that might be. But the bottom line is far more often we miss a couple free throws. We strike out a couple times and then we go into the batting cage or stay after the end. We're just shooting free throws and hitting balls and whatever. And we're not actually addressing the source of what kept us from really executing our skills as we intended to. So if you have your psychology in order and you're able to assess it more accurately, you can evaluate your performance more objectively, more accurately, and know where to actually go practice and get better instead of wasting your time practicing something that isn't the reason that you might not be playing well or performing as the way you want to.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the biggest misconceptions about practice is simply that you go beat a bunch of balls on the range or you go put up a bunch of shots and that's going to make you better in a game or a performance context.
Right.
And it's simply the evidence isn't there to support that. And so practice makes perfect got debunked, and then perfect practice makes perfect or practice makes permanent. But none of that actually really captures the context specific nature of it.
Yeah.
And that it means internal context too. So what you were feeling or what you're going to feel needs to be represented in that equation as well. And so beating a bunch of three footers when you don't have the same stakes wasn't going to move the needle. And the point is important to emphasize, right? That it wasn't actually the technical component in that moment either.
Nope.
Right. And you said that the eyes, visual focus, mm-hmm. that the attentional focus. So is your mind in alignment with your eyes?
That's exactly right.
And then temporal focus. Am I here? Am I in the past? Am I in the present? Or am I in the future?
Am I on time?
When I, I like that.
Yeah.
Somebody once described it as, are you on the front edge of now?
Mm.
Right. Like, so if the present actually had spaciousness to it, like where are you in the present?
Yeah.
Are you sitting back on your heels? Are you leaning forward? But that idea that if we stack all of those in a row, they're all aimed in the right direction, then we can start to troubleshoot beyond that.
That's right.
To understand. But before that, you're going to end up doing a bunch of unproductive stuff. You're not going to sleep as well because you drained a bunch of energy. You're not going to eat as well because you're eating later. Yep. Then you got to wake up and do it again the next day.
And the other thing that feedback loop, when we're practicing things that are the symptoms and not the source, is that it's also going to destabilize confidence. So for my client, for example, he could go hit three footers and make every single one of them for 3 hours. He goes back to the hotel and he goes to bed. He knows damn well that means nothing tomorrow. You can make a bazillion three footers and next time you have one tomorrow, when score counts and it's a slippery downhill and you got a safe par, all those three footers don't matter because you weren't addressing the source, because no perfect stroke guarantees that a ball's going to go in the hole. So if we are actually addressing the source and knowing when our psychology is making sure it's facilitating our skill execution, that doesn't always mean we do it well, but it means we know what was the cause, so to speak. And if you address the cause, the next time you stand up over a putt when score counts, you've actually addressed what's going to allow you to execute your skills more freely. And that is beyond gold for people who are trying to perform at the highest level. People who are trying to perform at the highest levels are not looking for guarantees. I mean, in a fantasy world, they are. But the ones who really understand performance on a deep level and what it means to be consistent are not looking for guarantees, because that's not reality. What they're looking for is, do I understand how to execute freely and can I evaluate that accurately and objectively?
Okay, that's a wrap. As always, thank you for offering up your most valuable resources, your time and attention, while you listen to this episode. You can find all the episodes of the Mental Training Lab at mtl.academy. That's mtl.academy. And look, I know this is the spot where I'm supposed to tell you to subscribe to the show or leave a review or whatever, but I'll be honest, I've only got one real request. If you found anything in this show helpful and you know someone who could benefit from these ideas or tools, just go ahead and send it their way. All right. That's all for now. I'll see you next episode.